America's ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/Golic. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Golic. That's netsuite.com/Golic.
Golic and Wingo with you. Glad you're with us on a Thursday morning. ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. We heard potentially optimistic news about baseball. We're going to talk to Eduardo Perez a little bit later, or what he thinks, as it feels like we're closer than ever before to actually having the game back on the field.
I don't know.
I'm being optimistic.
You can because you can look at the games all you want. It's about the money the owners are willing to spend. And 60 games at 100% pro rata is $1.5 billion. Their last offer to the players, whatever the games were at 80, whatever the percentage was $1.5 billion. So they're basically saying, we're going to spend the same amount of money. We're just shifting it up in the amount of games we're going to play.
The players have made it clear. They want 100% pro rata. So it's going to be, how few games are you willing to play as players, knowing you're preserving that as your long-term goal of nothing resembling a revenue stream?
And you can't file a grievance, because that's one of the caveats in this, that the league is saying, whatever we agree to, part of it is you can't file a grievance, which means you're going to sue us for more money.
But you'll get the universal DH.
Yes.
And expand
the playoffs for 2 years, for this year and next year.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. One player I was talking to last night said it feels good to be going back to work.
So I hope so.
That's why I'm being more optimistic than maybe anybody else, because that was his perspective. As baseball tries to begin playing, and we've said all along, football, and specifically the NFL, has the benefit of having the longest runway, because they are going to see how everybody else is doing this, and they're going to be able to see what works, what doesn't work, and apply that to their sport. But that runway is getting shorter by the day. As the end of next month, training camps are beginning to open up, are supposed to beginning to open up. So how will the NFL deal with a sport where social distancing is not an option? Yeah. You are going to be in somebody's face on every second of every play. So for more on that, we're delighted to be joined by the NFL's chief medical officer, Dr. Alan Sills, a neurosurgeon and the founder of the Vanderbilt Sports Concussion Center. Dr. Sills, thank you so much for your time this morning. I guess the overriding first question we have is, how does one play football in a situation where separation is ideal to not contract a virus and not an option?
Well, I think you're exactly right that we all realize that football and physical distancing really don't go together. But obviously the game and the activity in a game is one small part of the overall week experience for NFL players, coaches, and that whole ecosystem of people that are around each other. So there are certainly a lot of things that we can do to take care of each other outside of the game field or the practice field. And there are also some things that we're working on to mitigate risk on the field itself. But I think it illustrates the point that it's a challenge for a sport like ours, where physical distancing is just really not possible when we're actually playing the game.
So let's look at some of those things. Again, training camps are all open together July 28th, except for the two teams that start early. They go the 25th. What are some of the we've seen colleges and other places starting to open up? What are some of the testing protocols that you guys have in place?
Well, we're still working on the final details of our protocol, but I think you can expect us to do a very frequent testing protocol that's really centered around the idea of surveillance, which means that we're not looking for people that are symptomatic, that we think we'll catch those on other forms of screening. What we're trying to do with testing is to detect newly infected individuals at the earliest possible state before they have a chance to spread that infection to others within that team environment. So we want to have a chance to isolate them, get them the appropriate treatment, and again, make sure they don't expose everyone else in the environment. So that means that we're going to be testing really, really frequently, and we'll have to base participation around that testing. But this is also important to note, it's not just about players. This is about coaches, about strength and conditioning staff, about medical staff. Anybody that's in that team ecosystem, as we've been calling it, we'll have to test them because they're all going to share that risk together since they'll be around each other on the practice fields and throughout the week. And that extends to the game field as well. Anybody that's again, going to have close exposure there where we can't practice physical distancing.
Dr. Sills, when it comes to that, one of the things that the NBA has been dealing with is the idea that for them, a positive test could trigger a 14-day shutdown for a player, a two-week quarantine where they wouldn't be able to work out, and that's caused some concern. Have you guys landed on, if there is a positive test, how long and what would be involved for the player, coach, or personnel member that tested positive?
Well, that's an area that we're still really actively working on together with the NFL Players Association. We've also been in regular contact with the CDC, the White House Task Force, and other public health authorities because you're right that that's a crucial question for sports leagues to answer is how do you deal when there is a player who's positive or coach or someone who's exposed others? And what we're trying to work towards is something that incorporates what we would call a test-based strategy rather than simply an arbitrary time period of isolation. The concept that if we're testing really frequently, is it possible to shorten that duration of isolation from the rest of the team environment? So, again, that's an area of a lot of work that's going into, but we're doing it in conjunction with public health authorities who are having to consider those types of situations, not only in professional sports but in other areas as well.
Dr. Alan Sills with us, the NFL Chief Medical Officer, talking about how the NFL is going to plan on playing from a medical perspective with COVID-19 out there. You said you're working on some things to mitigate situations in games. What are some of those things that you guys are looking at? We've heard things about different kinds of helmets and all this kind of stuff. What sort of things are actually being looked at as practical options?
Well, I think there are a number of things you can do on game day. First and foremost, again, is look at the layout of the field. How many people are on the field? How many people are exposed to each other? And can we actually distance some areas of the field and keep people apart? So we think that's important as a first step. We're certainly looking at things about sterilization of equipment and everything, even down to the game balls and how we use that. And then I think you probably have heard in the media some reports that we are looking with a group of engineers very creatively at the possibility of some extended face shield mask type options that might be part of the football helmet because, again, we think there may be some things that we can do there to mitigate risk from a respiratory standpoint. And then, of course, throughout all of this, you have to continue to emphasize things like good hand hygiene, hand washing, and avoiding touching contaminated surfaces. So we're really looking at the entire game day experience from who's present to what they do to what they touch and what the sterilization procedures are and looking at that through the lens of how can we mitigate risk. That's what this is all about is what can we do to reduce the risk for every single person that's involved in that team environment, both on game day and outside the game day.
NFL's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Alan Sills, joining us here on Golic and Wingo. So players, when they have their meetings, we were discussing this and how it would work, and we keep talking about isolation of a player. So let's just take the quarterback room, for instance. If a player, one of the quarterbacks tests positive, obviously you isolate that player, but they've been exposed to other players in that room. And I know you say you would test them right away to see if they have it, but you tell me, obviously you're the doctor in this. Wouldn't it take a few times or maybe a few days for that to actually show up on the others as well? And if so, wouldn't you need to isolate those to other quarterbacks as well? Or am I off on that?
No, I think, again, Mike, you're talking the right concepts, and that's, as I said, why we're working on the exact details of those protocols. But I would say, for example, within the room, when you talk about a meeting room like a quarterback room or any of the rooms, there you can actually practice physical distancing and use of masks and other PPE to reduce risk for everybody involved. So again, can you convert that exposure from what would be called a close exposure to a more distant exposure? And that's a basic concept with regard to what you do in response. If you're familiar with the guidelines, you know, the CDC and others talk about close exposures, which means you're within 6 feet for an extended period of time. So that's what I'm talking about, how you have to look at things like how do we conduct our practices? How do we conduct our meetings? How do we lay out our facilities? All those things can be looked at and can be re-engineered in a way that reduces risk and prevents as many close exposures as possible. And so that's the stage we're in with these protocols, is what can we do at every step of our operation to look at it and to think about ways to reduce risk to the people involved. And in doing that, I think one of our athletic trainers really encapsulated it well. He said, you know, it's not going to feel normal because it's not going to be normal. Everything we do is going to be different in some way, whether it's how the building is laid out, how we take our meals, how we travel, how we practice. All of these things, I think, are things that we have to re-engineer and reconstruct, centered around the idea of how do we mitigate risk to everybody that's involved.
Dr. Sills, obviously everyone leaning on the infectious disease community when it comes to our understanding and the way that we go about this. You mentioned all the things that you guys are trying to control on your end. Dr. Anthony Fauci came out and said that Major League Baseball should try and avoid playing games into late October as things get colder and the virus could gear back up. How concerned are you guys when you hear statements like that?
Well, I think obviously, as I mentioned before, that we're in regular contact with the officials at the CDC, the White House Task Force, and also with other professional sports leagues. I speak regularly with the chief medical officers of the NBA, of the NHL, of Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer. We're also communicating regularly with professional sports leagues around the world with what they're learning through this. So we're all in the same boat together. And I think what we have to recognize is that we're going to keep in very close contact with the public health authorities, and we're going to respond to the situation at that time. We're not just going to put our heads down and say, here's what we're going to do, and we're going to ignore all those realities. And I think you've seen that approach throughout. For example, with the NFL draft, we looked at that and said, okay, here's what we'd like to conduct. This is an event we'd like to do. How can we do that and at the same time still respect the current public health policies and adapt to what's being asked of everyone at this time? So we'll take that same approach whether we're in July or October or January. We have to monitor what's going on the pandemic overall. We have to stay in close working relationship with public health authorities. And again, we have to adapt football to the virus, not try to adapt the virus to football. And so that's the challenge, and that's what we're working very collaboratively with the NFL Players Association and with our infectious disease experts and others to try to do.
Dr. Alan Sills with us, NFL Chief Medical Officer, trying to figure out the parameters of how you play football with the pandemic going on. Have you learned anything medically from so many of the NFL players that we know have tested positive? We saw the center for the Rams, Von Miller, who is asthmatic, by the way, and has some issues that would lead to him having problems with COVID, got COVID and recovered. We know about Ezekiel Elliott, Kareem Jackson, the Denver Broncos safety is now tested positive. Are there things that you have learned about the virus through some of these high-profile NFL players testing positive that has given you some information that makes you feel better about it one way or the other?
Well, of course, first of all, we hate to see anybody who's diagnosed with the virus, of course. And our club medical staffs are making sure that all those individuals get the appropriate treatment and they're taking all the right steps, and including contact tracing and communication with the public health officials. With that being said, it doesn't come as a surprise to us that there are new positive cases. I think this isn't the first wave of positive cases, and it probably won't be the last. And I think that just reflects the fact that this virus is still prevalent in our society. So as long as it's endemic in our society, we will have some new positive cases. And that's independent of how good our protocols are or how careful everyone is. So I think what we've learned is, again, it's all about how we respond. We want to identify those cases as quickly as possible, prevent spread, and make sure that everyone that's in that player ecosystem, whether it's other players, coaches, medical staff, the club personnel, player families, we want to make sure we're taking all the appropriate measures to decrease their risk. So once our players are back in our facilities, we'll have a very robust and active testing program so that we can, again, identify those new cases as quickly as we can.
The NFL's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Alan Sills, joining us here on Golic and Wingo. So a job I don't envy is what you guys are trying to do here, and you're trying to look at every scenario, and you have to have parameters. And one of those parameters, I'm sure, is worst-case scenario. You know, we've seen in college at Houston, they had, six players, all symptomatic, test positive, and they shut down the voluntary workout program. In your mind, is there a number on a team of players that if they test positive, players or staff on a team, that we can't be isolating because there's just too many that have it? Is there a number in your mind that says, guys, we have to shut this team down or shut down what we're doing until we get squared away?
Mike, I think it's hard to declare an exact number. I think it depends on a lot of factors of how the spread is going, what's happening in that community, and what the timeline is. But let me say this. We all recognize that that's a possibility. And as I mentioned before, we have to stay in close contact with public health officials, with the CDC and others, to make the best medical decisions that we can. And I think the two key words here is flexibility and adaptability. We'll have to remain flexible. We'll have to adapt to the situation, whatever it may be. And we've said that throughout. And I think the same is true with our protocols. Whatever those protocols are that we start with in July, they will evolve and they will change based upon new knowledge, based upon what's happening with the pandemic. But we'll stay in very close contact with those public health officials, and we'll make the best and the safest decision for everybody that's involved, whether, again, that's players, fans, coaches, everybody in that ecosystem. We've been very clear that the NFL is trying to do the most thoughtful thing that we can and to be measured and scientifically driven in everything that we do.
Dr. Sills, we've all mentioned that the NFL, college football, the fall sports have had a long runway with this. As you mentioned, you've had the opportunity to look to and learn from a lot of the other sports leagues. And so I'm curious, with all the time that you guys have had to gather this information from the start of the pandemic, when everyone first started reacting to this, to now, what's the one thing you think has been most beneficial to you guys that you've learned either just through that time period or from the other leagues about how you're going to proceed with this so far?
I think we've learned that this is really hard. It's not easy to do at all. There are a lot of moving parts to this, and it takes tremendous collaboration from everyone involved. And I think one of the key features, we talked about everyone in that team ecosystem sharing risk. It also is about sharing responsibility, because no matter how good a job we do at the facility, we can do physical distancing, we can do great hygiene around the facility. It's also about what everyone does away from the facility. And again, this isn't just players. This is coaches and other staff. Everyone has to be really conscious and do all the proper behaviors to mitigate risk away from the football field, as well as when they're at the facility. And that has to be consistent. That has to be day after day after day. Again, as long as the virus is endemic in the community. So that's a hard task to do, particularly over a 6-month season. But I think it points back to the need for continued education and just relying upon each other. This is really very much like football in the sense that teamwork and responsibility of the team is going to matter here. Every single person is going to have to play a role, meaning that every day they're going to have to take all the measures possible to mitigate risk. And yet we still will probably have some cases that we'll have to rely upon detecting early and isolating away. So that's what I'd say we've learned from talking to other leagues around the world. This isn't easy, but I'm very optimistic. We've got a lot of very smart, talented, creative people working on it. And I think there's tremendous commitment on behalf of all the stakeholders, including our partnership with the NFL Players Association, to work together and try to do this in the safest possible manner.
Dr. Sills, it's a tough task, and we'll see how it plays out, but we appreciate your time and your insights on how the NFL is preparing to play the upcoming season in the midst of the pandemic. Thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing how it all plays out.
Thanks so much for having me. Have a great day.
Yeah. Thank you.
You too. As well. So I think one of the things, and this was talked about in the NBA, and I guess we could put it here as well in the sports that are starting up again. If you get a positive test and you need to be isolated, the NBA, they were talking about, 10 to 14 days. And again, one of the things they mentioned was of doing nothing. Now, just think of an injury.
Yeah, not being able to work out, not being able to train.
Just think of an injury if you're out for 2 weeks. As part of that 2 weeks, you have the initial part of it to try and heal. But if you're going to be back in a couple of weeks, you're able to start to ramp up your workout so you're ready to go when those 2 weeks are up. Imagine not doing anything, no cardio, nothing physical, because they're afraid of the cardiac part of this. And then trying to jump back in, especially in the basketball season, because you're beating in the playoffs and you could miss games. In football, they're spread out a little bit. It's week to week, but still, imagine a football player. You are quarantined for 2 weeks, means you're not playing, and you can't do anything. I mean, I can't tell you, you know this, Mike, how quickly you can lose something, you know, from anything you've gained from working out and or conditioning of 2 weeks of doing nothing.
Yeah, I think football, again, because they have the advantage of their season proceeding at this point on time and in its entirety, of that being something that you just have to treat like a normal injury.
Yes, you do.
Meaning you look at that and there are some injuries where you wouldn't be able to do anything. This would be frustrating because I'm sure if someone was asymptomatic, if someone was dealing with this in a different form, you feel healthy enough to go. It's kind of like when guys deal with a concussion,
right,
and they can't go through certain things. You feel like you're all right, but the testing is telling you it's not time to go yet on some of these things. So that would at least be normal, more normal. The NBA's timeline would make that
That's
tough because
be
you're
different.
Trying to peg 10 pounds of you know what into a 5-pound bag in the way you're going to this finish.
Yeah, that's going to be tough in the NBA, man, for a guy. He's out. I mean, the games you miss, the playoff games you could miss, that could be really detrimental.
Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. All right, so we're going to get to plenty more of that. We're going to talk to Caron Butler here soon. But
right.
My God, did you guys see
we're taking a hard 180
Did
right
you guys
now.
See what Michigan tried to pull off yesterday?
I mean, seriously.
So the University of Michigan tweeted out last night a picture of, you know, one of their helmets, a decal. I think it was probably one of those phone backgrounds. It looks like it's set up. And it says tradition. And it's got a picture of their helmet. And it says the winged helmet, the most recognizable helmet in college football.
I mean, seriously? All I know is when I turn on TV and I see those helmets, I ask, is Michigan playing or is Delaware playing?
Nobody asked that.
Okay?
Nobody asked.
You know that. What? I went to Notre Dame. I asked
nobody,
that.
Right. Nobody else is asking that.
I asked that.
You know what? But people might say, we're biased. We went to Notre Dame.
No.
Of course you would hate Michigan. SI.com last year ranked the best college football helmets. Had Notre Dame number one, Michigan number two. The ESPN College Football 150, we had all those panels talking about best teams, best moments, best uniforms, and the best uniform conversation had Michigan's winged helmet at third and Notre Dame's golden domes at number one. And so this isn't just me talking, Notre Dame class of 2012. This is the world shouting back at you that clearly you're wrong in this instance.
Yeah, they're clearly wrong. Clearly wrong in the Notre Dame helmet.
Quite honestly, if we're having the conversation.
I put another team ahead of them. Maybe a couple more. Who?
Southern Cal USC. Might have a claim to number two.
USC.
Well, who was number two on the best uniform thing?
Number two on the best uniform thing was, it was something, it wasn't a helmet, it wasn't anything like that. It was, you know,
this is most recognizable helmet. I'm with you. I think Notre Dame is number one. I think what are the others? USC, Texas?
A lot of people would throw Texas, Alabama
Texas,
in there.
Texas, Alabama, absolutely.
You know, listen.
We're
Oregon Light. We have 400. Yeah. here's the thing. Look, I'm with you guys. The Golden Dome is significant, but there are other gold helmets out there.
They're not like this dull. Gold.
But there's a lot of gold helmets.
You see shiny gold helmet, you know Notre Dame.
I so want to be with you on this, but I think Michigan may have a point.
You mean where they have another school that has the exact same? There's one thing to have a nothing on and a gold helmet, but a duller gold, but you can tell the shiny gold. This is
gold.
The same thing with Delaware. The same.
By the way, the famous wing design dates back to 1938 when Coach Herbert O. Fritz Chrysler arrived from Princeton to begin a new era in Michigan football. So it was at Princeton first.
Actually, have you seen
this.
The Princeton helmets? They're kind of similar. Some of them
are. Yeah.
That's
stunner.
What I mean. You got three of them already? I mean,
Michigan.
God.
Right, look, Michigan, good
Henry, Henry Researcher, look up how many gold helmets there are in football teams.
It's the kind of gold because they're going on. No, but they're going to go on the wing design. They're not talking about color or cut. They're talking about winged on this one. And so I'm saying if you're going to say gold, there is a difference in all this one. Now, when I was at Notre Dame, there was a bit of a duller gold at that point. Maybe you could try and sell me on Navy or like Boston College out the stripe. But you look at it now, it's all glittery, it glimmers, just like the actual dome itself. Get out of here. No one in their right mind is going to vote Michigan over Notre Dame. Much like the fight song, there's honor in second place in all this. Because I do believe Michigan is the second best fight song in the country.
See, I like USC's fight song as well.
I'm big enough to admit that about Michigan in this. But second place is fine. Just understand who daddy is.
Let me just, you know, add this in here so you can go ahead and at me. Hey, Michigan, instead of worrying about that helmet, worry about beating Ohio State.
Don't do that now because they beat the hell out of us last year.
I know.
I've already gotten the score tweeted at me.
That's why I didn't say that game. I said Ohio State.
Yeah, there you go.
I know. Was that an awful weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is my daily hellscape. By the way, coming up next, NBA players are continuing the fight for social justice while battling for an NBA title. Is that going to work? We'll talk to an NBA champion on the front lines of the Black Lives Matter movement. We'll get to him after this.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
So that's the concern some NBA players have had as they are getting set to, we believe, return to play with the bubble slash campus environment in Disney. But several players, Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, Kyrie Irving among them, have said, hey, we don't want to take our foot off the gas here because we have everybody's attention in the wake of the senseless killing of George Floyd and the peaceful protests that have come out of that. On the subject of racial and social injustice to those of people of color in this country, and would it be better for us to not play? And that is a discussion that a lot of NBA teams and NBA players are having. So for more on this discussion, we're delighted to be joined by someone who knows what it takes to win a championship in the NBA and someone who is very involved in the Black Lives Matter movement, and that's a former two-time All-Star and NBA champion, Caron Butler. Caron, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time and your insights. When you hear players like Kyrie and Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley having these discussions, what are your thoughts on the things that they're talking about and whether they think playing or not playing is the right way to go about it?
First and foremost, thanks for having me on the show. And, you know, look, everybody's going to have different emotions, and you have to, one, respect their position. He's saying that for the first time in a long time, because all you usually get is a soundbite when guys talk about social injustices and things. They're just like, well, Kyrie don't want to play basketball. Dwight don't want to play basketball. People don't understand that for the first time in our lifetime, this is a great opportunity to continue the discussion and momentum and moving the needle. We've never had people from different walks of life, corporate, you know, be involved in social injustice like they have been involved to this extent. And we never had such a tragedy like what happened to Brother George Floyd. In a representation of, you know, Steven Jackson and what he's doing, it hit our NBA family extremely hard. And as a fraternity, we're rallying around a real issue, and people are really trying to figure out what is the best way to lead and continue to influence and use their platform wisely. Is it playing basketball in Orlando and maximizing that space and that platform, which the commissioner I've spoken to on the NBA virtual roundtable, and he said, look, he welcomed guys, you know, social stance. He will assist and partner up with pushing the narrative so that discussion and momentum don't drop off. So it's just up to the player to feel, you know, comfortable with, one, being in the bubble, playing the game of basketball, and then continuing to exercise the right to push the needle and move the needle on the social stance.
So, and absolutely, you can see both sides of this. So what would you do?
Honestly, in this position, I would still play the game of basketball because I know that that would be extremely therapeutic. I would want to complete the season, but I could easily say that because I'm retired and I just know what's more important to me at this state of my life. Younger guys, you know, it's different, you know, and if I was in the fire and in the foxhole right now, I would lead by example and do the right thing, you know, for committee. So if I felt like our guys needed some leadership and they were just like, you know what, bro, we don't want to do it. Adam Silver has, you know, given them the right to look, you know, some guys may not want to go to the bubble, and we respect that position. And, you know, you will still get the support. Unfortunately, you know, that would not drive capital and revenue. And therefore, you know, that's something that you will sacrifice. And I would be willing to sacrifice capital in this standpoint. And I know a lot of other guys will be as well because, you know, the social injustices is just, you know, just crazy in this country, has been for quite some time. And I think that guys are really willing and ready to sacrifice whatever it takes, you know, for the needle to be moved.
Caron Butler with us again, part of LeBron James' nonprofit geared towards fighting voter suppression called More Than a Vote, and certainly an incredible movement and cause there. And we've seen, as you mentioned, players rallying around this. You mentioned Adam Silver willing to be a partner. I know you were critical of James Dolan and his silence on a lot of this issue, but how much of this do you think now, especially for Kyrie, Dwight Howard, and the players in that group, is going to fall on the owners and what they're willing to publicly commit to as far as support?
A lot of it. You know, look, this is not the time to be politically correct for anyone. This is the time to stand on the right side of justice and acknowledge, you know, some of the things that have happened and gone, you know, undone and unaddressed in this country for, you know, centuries. And, you know, a lot of people was questioning, how did we get here? How did we get to this point? How did I not see this? And Kareem said it best. It's systemic racism, and it's also invisible racism that exists in this world. And it don't really... is not visible unless you shine a light on it. Now the world, not just the black and brown community, Latinx, but the world is shining a light on invisible racism, and it's very visible. So now when you look at, you know, corporate and the integration and what's happening up top, you know, a lot of things are brought to the table right now. And it's just, you know, impressive to see, you know, people trying to put their best foot forward and try to make the proper steps to, you know, just have some type of inclusion with the black and brown community and really have drive real change.
Caron Butler is with us this morning. So to those, you said you would play. To those who have said, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you know what? I would play, but it's easy for me to say that. Being 40 years old and understanding the platform and
sure.
How corporate adapt to it. So it's just, you know, it's an easy question for me, but I would not stop the momentum of my activism. I will always keep that pushing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's obviously the decision that Kyrie and these other people are trying to come to grips with. What kind of conversations would you have, not to convince somebody, but to sort of explain to those who are feeling that they don't want to play about why you feel it was important for you to play?
Well, you know, me personally, I just think that in order for us to really have change, you know, corporate and people that don't look like me has to be involved in the conversation, have to care. And, you know, when all the focus and attention goes to Orlando, you want to be in front of corporate. You want to be in front of as many eyeballs as possible and, you know, exercising your right to display all these things on the largest scale. You look at The Last Dance, how many eyeballs was on that? And you want to make sure that, look, every time we step on the court, it will be some representation of, you know, the movement and moving the needle and bringing social, you know, justice to our world, and always remembering and honoring the fallen, you know, that died tragically, that should be still be here with us today. But at the same time, if guys do not want to go in the bubble, if guys want to participate and be on the ground, being grassroots, leading these marches, using their platform, I cannot knock them not one. Like not one time. I salute them, I rally around them, and I support them. It's all about what are you most comfortable with. And, you know, I support them because they're my brothers either way.
Well, Caron, we appreciate your time and insights this morning. Thank you for joining us. And thank you for what you're doing. And we appreciate all your efforts on many levels. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate you as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Caron. I think it's one of the great things, and they're doing a lot of things, but what he and some of the other ball players and other athletes, it's not just basketball players, this whole thing about creating change and what's meant by, you know, how it can be created by the vote, by getting out and registering and voting from the local all the way to the national side. I love the fact that they're really, really hitting on that part of it.
Yeah, again, LeBron James putting the startup cash, him and Maverick Carter for a nonprofit to fight voter suppression called More Than a Vote, includes Caron Butler in that, but also Andrew Hawkins, one of our former colleagues here now at the NFL Network, Allison Felix, Asia Wilson, Arike Ngumbawale, and others, as well as Maria Taylor, I think, is involved as well. So plenty of great names involved with the cause that, like you said, has a chance to do a lot of real good and a lot of certainly very passionate
yep.
names and people behind that, like Caron Butler is one of them.
So we'll see what happens with the NBA players going forward. Meanwhile, Colin Kaepernick was hired, but not for an NFL job.
Ah,
we'll get into that after this.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
I do like Cap, and he fits what we're doing. He definitely would be someone that if something happened, you know, maybe we bring him in. I don't know.
Colin Kaepernick being back in the league will be politicized.
You have a guy who believes that Kaepernick deserves to be in the league, who at this point doesn't have a spot for him.
Don't sign Colin Kaepernick for political reasons. Sign him because he's a good football player that can help your team.
Like, it would be crazy to not have him on the workout list. But we haven't reached out. We haven't scheduled anything. No, we have not.
Golic & Wingo is brought to you by Sherwin-Williams. Ask Sherwin-Williams and save 30% on paints and stains June 19th through the 30th. Shop in-store, order online for curbside pickup. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
So,
go ahead.
No, it's all good. It's all good, partner.
Do your thing, man.
I was I was doing the thing that Junior does in the shower,
uh-huh.
So I apologize.
But, okay. But hopefully not in the shower because it's not your shower.
Well, there is a shower in there.
There is a shower in
you
there.
You didn't say I... You know, you never said it had to be in your shower.
So, for anyone that missed yesterday on the Levitard show, I ended up doing engaging in a debate with Bomani Jones.
You did.
Yeah. On the validity of peeing in the shower
when
you're in the shower. And I argued passionately in favor of your right to pee in the shower. Bomani is very against it. Trey brings up an interesting caveat to all this, though, which is it's got to be your shower. Like, you can't just be peeing all willy-nilly.
And you have to be taking a shower. You can't just use the shower as a toilet if you're not going to be showering.
You can't give me these rules now.
These are ingrained rules that you know, my friend.
Yeah, they are important, and they are a fabric of our society. It's what separates us from the animals.
There you go.
It's probably true. Okay, so we talked about Colin Kaepernick on the tees, and here's what happened. Today, Medium announced that Colin Kaepernick will be joining their board of directors. In addition to the board seat, Medium will partner with Colin on Kaepernick's publishing to create featured content focused on race and civil rights in America. Medium CEO Ev Williams says, "We've been in talks with Colin for some time and we're honored to be electing him to join our board. And among the other things we're going to have is conversations with Colin about these certain topics that have obviously been a huge passion thing for him. And we've seen a lot of people finally understanding what he's talking about.
And Medium is?
Yeah, Medium's like an online blogging platform. And this is actually something that's in conjunction with something new that they're doing. Medium, a lot of people go on written pieces there that you can access in their space. Colin will also be writing stories and collaborating on editorial features for Level, Medium, and Medium's new blog, Momentum, on anti-black racism and the civil rights in our society. So that's all going to be a part of it, kind of a multi-platformed approach of that video content and him writing, which is an interesting plot twist to this, because as much as Colin has meant to this and as much as his protest really started a conversation that's grown to such a fever pitch lately for so many reasons, Colin's voice after that initial wave has been something that hasn't been as much of the part of the conversation. People have often cited, where is Colin? What is he saying on this? And what he's represented to the movement has always been big, but I think having his voice back around as a part of the conversation is going to be a very big part about what happens next.
Something he obviously wants to do to be part of this, but does he still want to play football, and will he be signed by a football team is something more, you know, in what we're talking about. Anthony Lynn, the head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers, on a Zoom call, he said, hey, if nothing else, man, you should be working this guy out.
We haven't made plans to work Cap out. I mean, okay. I mean, Cap was he was a starting quarterback, a Super Bowl quarterback in this league. I think it would be crazy to not have him on your workout list. Unless there's other reasons why you shouldn't. But we haven't reached out. We haven't scheduled anything.
Okay.
No, we have not.
Golic and Wingo, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Understand, a workout list is different than just signing him.
Yes.
A workout list is a list that all teams do. You bring in guys to work out, and then you kind of have them in your hip pocket should you need them. If this position gets hurt or that position gets hurt, you look and see, who do we work out, how do they fit, and then you bring them back. That's what he's talking about. And I do believe there may be teams that may work him out, but I don't think anybody is just going to sign him before camp start, because that's the first time players and coaches are going to be together at the beginning of camp.
And the other thing that needs to be important part of this conversation here is this signing with medium should in no way affect what people are going to sign. We have players all the time. Chris Long, when he was a player. Malcolm Jenkins, very active. Like I
said, Malcolm Jenkins is working for CNN now.
Yeah. Yes, he's worked. So you can't say, oh, well, okay? That's not a disqualifier in any way, shape, or form that he's choosing to use his voice when he has the time, should he be signed to do something like this for Medium.
Yeah, and Dad, you pointed this out earlier. It is going to be a lot easier this time around as far as the outside perception, because we remember it was anything but a football decision last time for so many of these coaches, and certainly for who it really falls into the lap of, the owners involved in all this. I mean, hell, you had Steve Bisciotti out there saying, pray for us in this time while we get ready to deliver all that. And we've seen his stance very clearly different on this one, very clearly changed on a lot of this. And so I think because all those factors are mitigated, the president's even seemed softer talking about this than he had been in the past as far as the rhetoric he used around Colin. And so it's going to be, because I'm still at sure and still could be an underlying factor depending on how a particular owner feels about Colin Kaepernick. But at the very least, it seems like the public outcry that they thought might come with Colin being a part of their team is being reinforced to them. That is not going to be the case.
I think one of the tough parts now is going to, and again, we don't know what kind of quarterback he can be, but we can bring up the fact Michael Vick missed two complete years. A third, he was with Philadelphia, but only started one game, and then started that fourth year, kind of two and a half years really out, and played pretty well for a couple of years. So the thought that Cap could do that, certainly he could, but he also may not. I think an issue for a team, and we've talked about this a while ago as well, you may sign him and get less kickback than you used to get, but what if you have to cut him?
Yeah.
What if he isn't playing as well, and then you have to cut him? What that may start.
What a wonderful thing it would be for the opportunity for this to be a football decision.
Yeah.
And I said at the beginning of this, if you sign Colin, you're going to have to support all the things that Colin stands
absolutely
for.
Right.
That has become the norm now around the NFL. We're looking at these teams and players that are saying, yes, you are absolutely going to support the initiatives that matter to us. And so because that's part of the norm, let's hope we get to a place where this can become a football decision and we can get answers to those questions, because the bottom line is we just don't know about him as a football player. Give him the opportunity to find out and show us.
Exactly. And we'll see if that happens before training camp starts or after training camps begin. Coming up, as MLB proposes a new deal to the players, will they actually strike out before we get any baseball being played? We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio and ESPN2.